Clarkson, reel 32.
Depots are that way. If you get in a fleet, you get in a, we'll say this, a squadron of battleships. You've got two probably Portsmouth, one Chatham, two Devonport. And they don't mix. Now, when I was at the Red Sea, we went up to Suez once, and we lay in a canal there, and there was an Indian Marine ship, the Hardinge, and we were very chummy with them, although they didn't have so many naval ratings on there. They were Indian Marine, a lot of them were coloured people. But we were very chummy with those that were there. Being a wartime, you see, in peacetime, they're more or less troop ships, but wartime, of course, they had a lot of naval ratings on there. And, as I say, we were very chummy with them, but there was another ship, the Odin, that was one of the three class, the Odin, Clio, and a Spiegel, half sail and half steam they were. And the Odin was a Chatham ship. Now, we were a small ship. We didn't have as many ratings as the Odin did. They were all white. And so we went ashore on the canteen in Suez one night, or a Port Tufik, and a row started. Talking about raggies as we were the other day, there was a stoker, leading stoker off our ship. He recognised a fellow. He was Chatham Depot, by the way. He recognised another fellow who'd been a pal of his from the Odin in there. Well, this Odin's fellow, his pal from the Odin, he resented it, and they started an argument and a fight. And within half a minute, I suppose, it was a free fight. The Odin's versus the Suva. And I can remember old chiefs and POs all in this lot, and I can remember an old white-headed chief PO from the Suva, our old chief Buffer, and he was standing in the doorway bashing them as they went out. I finished up on the floor, and two blokes standing over me with chairs ready to bash me. They really caned us. They beat us wholesale. And so we went aboard that night, very early. And we had black eyes and we had lumps off our scalps. I was cut down here, where I had a tooth missing. And our captain, at that time, was the Honourable W.H.D. Boyle, the Earl of Cork and Orange. And he lined us all up and told us what a disgrace we were. We couldn't behave ourselves when we went ashore, and if we got involved in a fight, we couldn't win it. But as a little heartener, he said, the Hardinge is coming in tonight. And so the Hardinge came in, and a couple of our spokesmen went aboard and saw the Hardinge, and that night everybody available from the Hardinge and the Suva went ashore. We cleared the canteen. We did. We got the Odins out, all these Chathamites. We belted them and we slung them down and we chased them down to the canal and they got back to the ship. They hated us. We hated them too for the remainder of the time we were out there. But that was one ship versus another, a different depot. And it was just the same wherever we went. The Iron Duke, in later years, she was the flagship. Nobody liked the flagship. Yeah. Not that we ever got on the gallery. We were worse off than the others. But they used to jeer us when we were waiting to catch a boat back at night, and they'd all had a few. But yeah, it's you, so-and-so. When I was in the Royal Sovereign, she was known as the Tiddly Quid. And that was just the same there.
That anybody who was in the new... So also about the Emerald, if you were the Emerald's party... Part of his
retinue.
You weren't like them.
What
we're just talking about this business of the Chatham, Devonport, Portsmouth differences. Yeah. Could it happen on occasions that a Portsmouth man could end up in a Devonport ship?
Oh, yes.
Now, what would be the situation if you were the only one, or maybe a small number of Portsmouth?
You more or less kept your mouth shut. You didn't talk about your own depot, and you didn't blow them up in any way at all. There's an example of that photograph I showed you of the crowd of us on the Iron Duke there, and amongst that lot is one shipwright, a West Countryman, and he was only there because he was a diver. And if ever you saw a bloodshed in a fight, it was with him and a shipwright from a Portsmouth shipwright, they'll earn too good. And Ern Toogood was one of these fellows who always done wrong in everybody else's eyes. He wasn't good at his job. He always, everything he'd done, everybody sneered at him. But they didn't know the value of his physical powers. And so this diver, the West Country fellows, always having a go at him. And I remember the... one day, during the riots in Alexandria, two of us had to go ashore with sidearms. We had to be armed. Our picket boat had knocked the yacht pier down, and we had to repair that, but it was a risky job on account of the rioters there. And when we came off, I went down the shipwright's mess with this shipwright. Funny thing, they picked us two of us out because we were deadly enemies, and they knew that we'd get on with the job, and we wouldn't waste time talking. However, I went down there in their mess when we came aboard, and there was this West Countryman having a go at this Toogood. He was calling him everything, he used to say. And eventually, Toogood suddenly rose up, and as I walked out the door, I heard him say, he had a bad arm, that was it, he was on the sick list. He had his arm in a sling. He took it out of the sling, but it was more or less useless. And I knew he used to deal with the bruising. And I heard him say, "The good Lord gave on too good a good right arm, and by God he'll use it." And he did. With one arm, he nearly killed this Devonport shipwright. Oh, that was, by the way, we were arriving in England to pay off the following day. And he pasted him. He came out of the mess, and I said, "You leave him alone, for God's sake." I said, "You've surely got enough." "No, I don't," he said. "No," he said. "For 2 years he's been chasing me," he said. And he went back and heard a scream as the mess was in darkness. They'd busted the light, somebody had. And Ern went in there and heard a scream. "No, no, no, bang! 2 years you've been persecuting me." He nearly killed him. Well, he ought to see. He looked as if he'd been run over a steamroller the next day. And he had to get back to Devonport then. But that was a case. It was the odd man out, he was. And he'd made himself a little bit unpopular.
So if you're an odd man out, it was best to keep quiet and...
Yes, more or less agree, but you don't want to fall out with them. Say nothing if you don't agree with what they're...
They didn't. I mean, if you were quite reasonable, you wouldn't find people taking advantage or digging at you. I mean, if you behaved yourself and you were the odd man out, that was quite, reasonable.
Yes.
It was only when you tried to get too big for your boots.
You tried to assert yourself. Now, I remember and this fellow... Toogood, oh, he was tough. And I remember going ashore that day, and he was in the pub at Portsmouth. He was an ex-dockyard shipwright, and there was all his pals there, the civvy dockyard shipwright. And he was having a drink, and he saw me come through the door of the pub. He thought I was going to get on to him. I wasn't. Oh, no, I didn't want any. And he said, "I know what you're going to say." He said, "Don't say it." I said, "I'm not saying anything, right? Don't worry." Both towards the other, and in actual fact, of course, the Chatham lot, they were nearly all Cockneys, anyhow. The West Country, they were all bugger-me-damn fellows, and I suppose the Portsmouth ones were the more, what should we say, the halfway between.
And would that be true at Rosyth, Port Edgar? Would it be the same there, that that would tend to be Scots people?
Oh, no.
No.
Port Edgar?
Yes.
What happened there?
And then on the 5th and 4th?
Yes. No, that was that was another place that I didn't go to, but nearly every other artisan did. There was always a big staff there. The destroyers used to go to Port Edgar. I only went there once, and that was to see somebody there. But I was never there at ship's company. No, they were the Scotch people. They were distributed amongst the three depots. Yes. And then they went, if they ever got up that way, they went from the depot.
Yeah, that's right, I get you.
Yes.
That was interesting, actually, on that business of the differences between... Can I just finish on barrack life and on your own experience?
Yeah.
I just want to ask you a couple of things about what it was like. If you were living in the barracks, we talked about accommodation and you maintained that it was... well, at the best, it wasn't very good. What about the food? How was the food arrangements in the mess? Was it in the barracks?
They weren't bad at all.
No.
For the simple reason that, going back as I told you about the general messing and the playmaster's messing, he had so much money, you see, was say, taking a mess of, say, at least 200 in that mess. He had 200 men's daily allowances, people who never stopped to tea at night or supper. Weekends, there were at least three quarters of them ashore. So he had the money to give them good food. Oh yes, the food arrangements were very good there.
When was that proper meals? What was the messing arrangement, in fact, in barracks? Was it you
breakfast?
You sat down. It was served up by.
In the PO's mess, you had we had messmen.
Yes,
that's messmen, and they put it out for you.
Yeah, and for the other ranks, the same thing.
The others,
the same as. What was the messing arrangement, in fact, in the barracks?
In the others, you had a leading hand in charge of each mess.
Yeah.
Say anything, 10 to about 25, I suppose, in the mess. And when the he had to superintend the serving out of it to make sure that everybody had an equal whack. Yeah. Well, and then the duty cooks amongst the mess, they would do the fetching from the galley, taking back the empty tins, washing up. And that sort of
thing. It was all prepared in the galleys, in fact. The food was completely...
Yes.
It came cooked, and you
That's
just
right.
served it out. And you did, in fact, you ate quite well. What would be the meals in the bar, starting with, say, breakfast, or the first meal of the day?
Well, cereals. This was in later...
This is the
years, I suppose.
1920s.
Cereals, kippers, spithead pheasants, as we call them, or eggs, boiled... That was, nobody ever went much on that lot. Some were broken and some weren't, and they were, seemed to me, they're always cheap eggs. But otherwise, kippers or herrings in tomato sauce or something like that. The dinner, you seem to get plenty of meat, potatoes, greens, and arters. It wasn't bad at all.
And supper, you got... What time was afternoon meal at five, supper?
12
o'clock was lunch.
12 o'clock, yes, for lunch.
You knocked off work.
Seven bells tea. It was 3:30.
Yeah.
The majority of natives wouldn't be staying. They might have a cup of tea and that was all. They wouldn't want anything to eat. They were getting ready for ashore then. And then there was a supper, yes. That would be cold meat or salad or anything like that. Oh, yes, that was pretty
good. And was there something after that? Was there tea at night, cocoa? Would you have to buy that from the nephew yourself?
Oh, no. There was supper provided, yes. The first meals I ever had in the barracks was when I joined. They used to serve it out, then you all had to stand back on the sides, and there was an old pensioner PO there in charge, and he saw it all doled out, so many portions. And then you say, right, and there'll be a mad gallop. Sit down and get the biggest one.